The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I paid for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Welcome to a Tuesday. And if it's Tuesday, it's election day in New Hampshire. Welcome to the first in the nation primary. Oy. And after what we just went through in Iowa, I'm hoping things go better in New Hampshire today. I actually lived in New Hampshire for about a year and a half. Back in the early 2000s, I was programming a radio, really cool radio station, music station, up in Haverhill is how it's pronounced. Haverhill, Massachusetts. The station insisted on calling itself a Boston station, even though it was right on the Massachusetts-New Hampshire border. And I lived over the border in Salem. Cute little town, Salem, New Hampshire, not Massachusetts. Really cute little town. The station I worked at was a great music station owned by a crazy man. And and so I wound up leaving by mutual agreement right before Allison started kindergarten. And that's when we moved back down to Florida. And everything's been downhill ever since. I was going to start with a funny. I guess I could put, but we'll get to it in a minute. I got to start with something else because it's really disturbing. Seeing Michael Bloomberg rise in the polls, and I'm sorry, for the many, many years that I've been aware of him, he's been Michael Bloomberg. But now that he's running for president, he apparently did some focus group testing, and Mike tested better than Michael. So it's Mike Bloomberg all of a sudden. I've never, in all of the years since he's been in the public spotlight, have I ever heard him called Mike Bloomberg. Never. It's always been Michael Bloomberg. And so to me, he'll always be Michael Bloomberg. Anyway, he'll also always be a fucking racist. So a couple of things happened. One, I made a mistake last week. I tweeted something about Michael Bloomberg being a lifelong Republican. He is not a lifelong Republican. Michael Bloomberg is a man with no principles and no strong convictions about any political ideology. Some might think that's an advantage. I happen to think it's chicken shit. So this is Michael Bloomberg in 2004. At the Republican National Convention, where George W. Bush was running for re-election against the Democrat John Kerry. Now, John Kerry was John Kerry, but really, George W. Bush was a war criminal. And here's what Michael Bloomberg said at that convention.
In the war on terror, I want to thank President Bush for supporting New York City in changing the Homeland Security funding formula and for leading the global war on terrorism. The president deserves our support.
What?
We are here to support him.
What?
And I am here to support him.
Great. Okay, so that was in 2004 at the Republican National Convention. I think that was before Michael Bloomberg became a Republican to run for mayor of New York. New York City, that is. So that happened. Okay, so fast forward a few years later, Michael Bloomberg becomes mayor of New York City, and he implements the stop and frisk policy, right? And in 2013, he sat for an interview on WOR radio in New York, and, well, the subject of stop and frisk came up. Again, this was 2013.
They just keep saying, oh, it's a disproportionate percentage of a particular ethnic group. That may be, but it's not a disproportionate percentage of those who witnesses and victims describe as committing the murder. In that case, incidentally, I think we disproportionately stop whites too much.
What?
And minorities too little.
Really? Oh, we stop whites too much and minorities too little. And you might be thinking, what, huh? He's contradicting what he just said. Well, now more audio has surfaced and it's come through a friendly acquaintance, I should say. Benjamin Dixon does a radio show similar to mine. Obviously his, but say similar to mine. He's online as I am. He's been at it for a few years. He's been amassing a huge audience. And well, maybe because he uncovers things like this. Let me just play for you this audio that Benjamin Dixon played yesterday. It's from Michael Bloomberg in 2015, speaking at the Aspen Institute. Now, apparently, Michael Bloomberg blocked the video from being released, but somehow Benjamin Dixon got a hold of this audio. It's a minute and 4 seconds worth of audio that I want you to listen very, very carefully to. The sound is not the clearest, so I'm going to pump it up, and I want just listen carefully for the next minute, okay?
95% of your murders and murderers and murder victims fit one MO. You can just take the description, Xerox it, and pass it out to all the cops. They are male, minorities, 15 to 25. That's true in New York. It's true in virtually every city. And that's where the real crime is. You've got to get the guns out of the hands of the people that get killed. So you've got to be one of them. Spend the money, put a lot of cops in the street, put those cops where the crime is, which means
send those cops where the crime is to the minority neighborhoods.
And intended consequences is people say, oh my God, you are arresting kids for marijuana. They're all minorities. Yes. That's true. Why? Because we put all the cops in the minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why we do it? Because that's where all the crime is. And the way you get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them. And then they say, oh, I don't want to get caught, so they don't bring the gun. They still have a gun, but they leave it at home.
Oh my God. Now, chances are you didn't hear all those words because it was garbled somewhat. So let's bring on the man who found that audio, Benjamin Dixon. Hey there.
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
Well, I'm okay, as well as can be expected in this day and age, which is, you know, not so great. Hanging in there, I guess, is the best I can say. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and definitely like to be considered a friend of the show.
It's
been a while since we spoke, but definitely love your work.
Well, thank you so much. No, it's been too long. And a few years ago, I think shortly, not too long after you got started, you came on the show and we talked a few times. And I apologize for not reaching out more recently, because we should have an ongoing conversation because we are on the same page in so many ways. But when I saw that you're the one who found this audio, it's like, okay, I got to call Benjamin, because first of all, to say congratulations and thank you for releasing this. And can I ask how you obtained this?
You know what, Nicole, it's been sitting online for 5 years. There's an hour long version of this that's been on YouTube for 5 years.
Wow.
And I stumbled onto it just doing research for my podcast. And I stumbled onto the entire conversation about what happened in Aspen. Strangely enough, the NRA TV, Dana Loesch, she covered it from the aspect of Bloomberg attacking the Second Amendment rights of black men. Obviously, they had their spin to it, right?
Right.
But she didn't have the audio. All she had was the transcript.
Oh.
And so that's when I stumbled onto the Aspen Times article showing that he had the video suppressed. But I just took a chance and I said, let me do some searching. And I found the full hour content, and I found that exact spot where he said those things. And I did a little bit of audio there to make it sound a little better. If you listen to the original on YouTube, it's hardly distinguishable. But I was able to pull out as much as I could out of it and got the transcript. And obviously it's been confirmed. I confirmed it with the Aspen Times article and several other articles. And so now we know for sure he's put out a statement about it.
And I'll get to that in a second. And you did put it in video form where you transcribed what's being said.
Yes.
So I will post that on my blog today, along with today's podcast, obviously. And so people can read along with it, because when you hear the words and read them, it helps you to hear what he's saying. Bloomberg put out a statement. Oh, what excuse did he make this time?
I have not seen his statement directly, but as I was reading the piece from CNN coming after me. They said that that he has apologized before and sort of, you know, basically he's just doubling down on his original apology. But I haven't seen it from his timeline yet.
Gotcha. So Benjamin Dixon, you mentioned CNN. This video I did pull, and I'm going to play it right here. We need to set it up. So CNN covers the story because obviously this is making news, as it should. Because do you have the text in front of you there? For those who couldn't make out exactly what Michael Bloomberg was saying,
I don't have it in front of me, but I can. I would have to pull up the video myself because I typed it into the system that I use. But
gotcha.
I don't have it.
And I think I have it here somewhere. But let me just play. I'm going to play for you what CNN played. They took one little clip out of the minute. They took about 10 seconds out of it, and then it's sort of shoot the messenger time, I guess. So
exactly.
So here's what how CNN presented this, because Benjamin Dixon, you're the bad guy because you're a Bernie Sanders supporter. Oh my God. All right, so here's what happened. Here we go.
Minority neighborhoods. Yes, that's true. Why we do it? Because that's where all the crime is. And the way you get the guns out of the kids' hands is to throw them against the wall and frisk them.
So here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
Important context here. We don't have the full tape. So this is obviously snippets that have been released. The podcaster and the writer that released this sound is clearly a Bernie supporter.
Oh,
if you look at his Twitter feed, he's very anti-Bloomberg. He is promoting a hashtag, Bloomberg is a racist. We don't know how he got the sound to begin with. So lots of questions are being asked, especially on the timing of this. As you noted in your introduction, a poll yesterday shows Bloomberg rising in the polls and particularly strong support in the African-American community. He polled at 22%, just behind Joe Biden at 27%. So the timing here and the mission here all calling into question.
But we also know, right, Christina, that Bloomberg is going to face continued questions about the stop and frisk policy, about
excuse me, my equipment is okay. So Benjamin Dixon. So that was the segment there on CNN. We don't know where he got this video. You're not hard to find. You're on Twitter at Benjamin P. Dixon. I got to change the chyron here on YouTube because I have the wrong thing written down there. And it's easy enough to find you. They could have just asked. And as for them not having the entire transcript, well, it sounds like you have the entire transcript and it's right there online.
Right. They have access to it. There's a large portions of it that's been transcribed by Aspen Times where I stumbled onto it. The hilarity of it is the framing that reporter used. Come to find out, Christy or Christina or some derivation of that.
Right.
She's formerly of Bloomberg Television.
Of course she is.
So that was, you know, and to be fair to CNN, or actually not fair, to call them out a little bit more, several of their commentators follow me on Twitter and we talk all the time.
Right.
So they have a very direct line. I've been on CNN. They know how to get up with me. But another thing that they intentionally excluded, obviously, was a picture of me, which is fine.
Right.
But also the fact that I'm African American.
That's right.
Right. So they
you
framed
are.
This as a Bernie bro thing and a coming out to attack the African American narrative. But it would help for them to let their audience know that the person who released it is black.
It would. It doesn't meet their narrative. And I don't know if you've heard some of the other stuff that's been going on. I mean, and I'm guessing you're as distressed as I am by the fact that this guy, former Republican, and as I just said a few minutes ago, somebody who really has no, I think he's any way the wind blows, whatever suits his political aspirations, because again, he was a Republican mayor of New York for two terms. When he couldn't run for a third term on the Republican ticket because the party said no, that's when he became an independent. And I guess when he decided he was going to run for president, that's when he decided to become a Democrat again. There is no strong stance, it seems, on anything except having to do with maybe his pocketbook and guns.
Yeah.
Give it to him on guns. Thank you for mayors against gun violence, whatever it's called. He's done good work there. But this I find just astounding.
Yeah. The context they also left out is the fact that I love Elizabeth Warren. And in fact, in the podcast where I discussed this, I credit Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax calculator, ElizabethWarren.com, because she points out exactly how much Mayor Bloomberg will lose in taxes or have to pay in taxes if she's elected. And so for him to invest $1 billion is nothing compared to the $3.56 billion that he would have to pay in taxes. So he doesn't have any solid ideology that he's running on other than making a good investment to save about $2.56 billion.
Wow. Right. Exactly. Now, what about Michael Bloomberg's contention that, you know, he'll turn his whole organization and the billions of dollars of spending over to whomever the Democratic nominee winds up being? You think that's true if it's Bernie or Elizabeth Warren?
That's the thing. I think it's true if it's anybody but Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. We'll just have to wait and see. But I think it's very dangerous. And we would have to appeal to all of his staffers. We would have to make sure that his staffers have positions inside of whoever the nominee is, because these people have to work. They have to eat. And sometimes a lot of people are in financial situations. They might reluctantly have to work for Bloomberg. But we have to be prepared for that eventuality, because I don't know that we could take him at his word.
Now on CNN, they called out the timing on this. Was there a timing issue? Is it because, look, I'm watching the polls and I don't put a whole lot of credence in polls because we know, we don't know anything until people have voted. I do believe in exit polling, which all the TV networks have told us, you can't trust exit polling. We fix the numbers of the exit polls based on the results of the ballot counting, which to me says, uh-oh, there's a problem here. But I digress. The thing that's disturbing is that with all the money Michael Bloomberg's been spending on ads, and he's closing in on $1 billion now. I know I shook my head when Tom Steyer said he'd spend $100 million on his ridiculous quixotic campaign. But Michael Bloomberg is closing in on $1 billion, and the first votes are just being cast today. And now all of a sudden his numbers are on the rise everywhere he's been spending money, and including under among African Americans, where Biden thankfully is losing some of the support, but it seems to be mostly going to Michael Bloomberg. Did that have anything to do with the timing of your release of this?
No, not at all. So, Michael Bloomberg, most of my attention has been given to Mayor Pete Buttigieg. I'm not a fan of his.
Nor am I.
But when I paused over the weekend and I really just thought about the unique threat that Michael Bloomberg poses to democracy, his ability to purchase this election is one of the most dangerous things that I think can happen. And where I know Donald Trump is dangerous. We have to get rid of him, but at the expense of selling our democracy to an oligarch. So that is what was really bothering me over the weekend. And so yesterday morning, it's really serendipity. I sat there and did some basic research and I stumbled on this and I put it out. Matter of fact, to be honest with you, Nicole, I did it on my podcast at about 8 o'clock in the morning. Uh-huh. I left for the day and went out and did some work, blah, blah, blah. And then it just dawned on me. I said, you know what? This might be a little more important than I give it credit for. So I came back home and I did the editing, and I came back home and did the video and put it out. And lo and behold, it actually was. So it really is sheer serendipity on this one.
Well, good for you. And I should also point out, Benjamin Dixon, we're alike in a lot of ways. You do your own show. You're a one man show there, as I'm a one woman show here. Lot of other shows, they've got producers and they've got screeners and they've got webmasters, and they've got you do everything on your end, just like I do everything here. So
every single thing, Nicole. And I'm just glad at this point that this is a testament to all independent media.
Yes,
we're out here doing the real work while CNN is still trying to figure out how we did it.
Absolutely. And look, it's so easy. So I direct messaged you on Twitter because that was the fastest way to get to you. They had many, many ways to contact you. It's not like you're hiding out and are unavailable to talk to media.
Right. Yeah. And so, they finally later on in the day, I got a message from one person at CNN, but this was apparently after they had already ran the segment with Christine or whatever. And so they had put the narrative out on television, and they wanted me to comment for the article that they're getting ready to release sometime later on today, if they haven't already released it. But that's probably how they'll cover themselves. But in terms of what they put out across national television, they played ignorant. They feigned ignorance.
Unreal. So. Why am I not surprised? I'm not surprised because this is the problem with the corporate mainstream media today. I'm still kind of apoplectic over what I saw Tweety, Chris Matthews, say the other day, with Joy Reid sitting nodding dutifully by his side. For those who haven't seen it, let me just, since we're on the subject, let me just share this with you. So this happened. It was the debate. So it was Friday night in New Hampshire before the debate or after. It was post-debate special, so it was after the debate. By then, I was already asleep. I did not see this when it happened in real time, but I did see it afterwards, and my jaw dropped. And there's not much that Chris Matthews can say that shocks me anymore. This one did it. So here's this.
I have my own views of the word socialist, and I'll be glad to tell them, share them with you in private. And they go back to the early 1950s. I have an attitude about them. I remember the Cold War. I have an attitude towards Castro. I believe if Castro and the Reds had won the Cold War, there would have been executions in Central Park, and I might have been one of the ones getting executed. And certain other people would be there cheering, okay? What? So I have a problem with people who took the other side. I don't know who Bernie supports over these years. I don't know what he means by social. 1 week it's Denmark.
Oh my God.
We're going to be like Denmark. Huh. Okay, that's harmless. That's basically a capitalist country with a lot of good social welfare programs. Denmark is harmless.
He's pretty clearly in the Denmark category. Yeah.
Is
you
he?
Sure? How do you know? Did he
How
tell
do you
that?
Know that?
Well, I mean, that's what he says, and that's what his agenda calls for, right?
Yeah.
He's not calling for
anything. Let's figure that one out.
Well, we haven't seen a campaign where video of him praising the other version
right.
which is Castro has been used.
Well, but that
will be used.
That's a question what the effect that has.
Well, what does he think of Castro? That's a great question. What did you think of Fidelismo? We all thought he was great when he first. I thought he was cheering like mad for him went in, and then he became a communist and started shooting every one of his enemies.
Okay, hold those thoughts.
Oh my God! I mean, come on, really? So meanwhile, the thing that happens with that, I was just as I'm getting ready to go, I was listening to Tom Hartman as I'm setting up my stuff here, and he has a caller call in who says, you know, socialism is communism. Mm. You know, this is why Donald Trump loves the poorly educated. I'm just stunned. Not surprised.
I'm quite sure Tom knew how to handle that one well, because that was that's hilarious.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So here we are. This is going to be an uphill battle all the way. Not only do we have to fight against the Trumpsters, not only do we have to fight back against the uneducated and the mainstream corporate media, but people who are Democrats who are pushing some of this nonsense as well. The nonsense has got to stop, and they need to just say, here's what I say to people, and I'm guessing that you feel about the same. In the primaries, you vote for whomever most closely aligns with your ideals, with who has policies aligned most closely with what you believe in. That's what you do in the primary. Right. Stop trying to second guess who can win, because if we think back 4 years ago, none of us thought Donald Trump could ever win.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. No, I absolutely agree. And I think a lot of people are so desperate to beat Donald Trump that they are willing to consider an oligarch like Michael Bloomberg. But I don't feel like Michael Bloomberg is telling the whole story. I don't believe he actually thinks that he can win. I think he believes he can stop Elizabeth Warren and he can stop Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
And so it's we're fighting on multiple fronts, like you said.
We are. So we've got a big fight ahead of us, and we need to be united on it. Benjamin Dixon, thank you for doing the work, listening to that.
Thank you.
A speech of Michael Bloomberg's from the Aspen Institute. I can't even imagine. So thank you for going above and beyond and pulling out what's something that everybody needs to hear and for broadcasting it. Find Benjamin Dixon at thebenjamindixonshow.com, of course, on Twitter at Benjamin P. Dixon. And I promise we'll stay in touch, because
let's do that.
Yeah, we must. Thank you, Ben.
Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye. All right, so I had to start the show that way today, because kudos to Ben Dixon. He deserves, I just lost everything on my screen here. Everything went, I don't know what I did here, but here, applause for Ben Dixon. All right, I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll save the funny for when Laffy is here, because right now, I think we should get to the news. Because, oh my God, there's a lot of news going on. So we'll do what's news. We'll come back with Gotta Laugh and a Funny next. It's Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Tuesday is the day for the first in the nation primary in New Hampshire. Polls all have Bernie Sanders in the lead. This might be a good time to remind people to vote in the primary for the candidate whose policies most closely align with your priorities. The general election is where we can compromise. The primary is when you reach for the stars. Now go vote. The megalomaniacal occupant of the White House held one of his Nuremberg rallies in New Hampshire Monday night because he can't stand not being the center of attention. He was his usual ugly, vile, profane, sickening self. Don't worry, I'm not going to play any clips from it. The White House on Monday submitted its $4.8 trillion federal budget proposal for 2021. Of course, he just delivered his State of the Union address last week in which he said this.
I've also made an ironclad pledge to American families. We will always protect patients with pre-existing conditions. And we will always protect your Medicare, and we will always protect your Social Security, always.
But the guy's a liar. So, according to Forbes, not exactly the liberals' best friend, Trump's budget would reduce Medicare spending by a total of $756 billion between 2021 and 2030, and would cut down on reimbursement rates to healthcare providers, reducing how much doctors, hospitals, and hospices are paid for providing healthcare. The budget also takes aim at Social Security disability insurance, calling for a $75 billion decrease in spending over the next 10 years. Oh, and there's less money available for nursing homes, long-term care, and other senior health costs now covered by Medicaid. Trump's budget would also eliminate an existing student loan forgiveness program for public workers. NASA would get a $25 billion boost from Trump's plan with the aim of sending astronauts back to the moon by 2024. All in all, despite calling for major cuts, the budget would fail to eliminate the national deficit over the next 10 years, as he has often promised. Oh, and remember what Donald Trump said about the injuries sustained by U.S. troops in the Iranian bombing in retaliation for his targeted execution of their top general?
I heard that they had headaches and a couple of other things, but I would say, and I can report, it is not very serious.
So you don't consider potential traumatic brain injuries serious?
No, I don't consider them very serious injuries relative to other injuries that I've seen.
Well, according to a new Reuters report, the number of U.S. soldiers who suffered traumatic brain injury from Iran's missile attack on their Iraqi base last month has risen to more than 100. The figure marks a jump from last month when 64 such injuries were reported. So you think the rule of law will prevail even in Trump's America? Well, federal prosecutors are urging that longtime Donald Trump advisor and Republican political provocateur Roger Stone be sent to prison for 7 to 9 years for his conviction on charges of lying and witness tampering during investigations of ties between Russia and the Trump campaign. In the wake of that recommendation, Donald Trump tweeted, quote, "This is a horrible and very unfair situation. The real crimes are on the other side as nothing happens to them. Cannot allow this miscarriage of justice. I smell another pardon in the air. Heaven help us all." And there is hope on the horizon. Changes in attitudes. There were elections held in Ireland, and guess what? The left-wing nationalist party, Sinn Féin, surged into first place ahead of the traditionally dominant, more conservative parties. Counting is still underway, and with the race so close, the ultimate seat breakdown may not be known for a few days, but with almost all first preference votes tallied, the progressives won the popular vote with 24.1%. Just saying. Oh, by the way, despite Donald Trump's claims of the best economy ever in the history of the world and most jobs gained, it's all lies. Newly revised figures from Donald Trump's own Department of Labor show that 6.6 million new jobs were created in the first 36 months of Trump's tenure, compared with 8.1 million jobs created in the final 36 months of President Barack Obama's. That's a decline of 19% under Donald Trump. Just a fact check public service from your pals here at What's News. And the coronavirus keeps flaring. China's death toll continued to surge on Tuesday, rising above 1,000, according to Chinese state media. China's Hubei province, the epicenter of the epidemic, reported more than 100 new deaths on Tuesday, making it a one-day record. The number of cases in mainland China reached about 42,300, bringing the global total to more than 42,700. To slow the spread of the flu-like virus, Chinese authorities have imposed partial lockdowns on more than 80 cities and even restricted access to some residential areas. Oh, but Donald Trump says the coronavirus, he'll be all over by April, because he knows so much about everything. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.
And now, it's time for the Nicole Sandler Show segment, Shooting the Shit with Laffy.
It is Tuesday. Every Tuesday we get together with our pal Gotta Laugh and talk about what's happening in the news. Oh, it's so much fun! Sorry. First we got to get Laffy on the line. Hello.
You reached the Oscars hotline.
Oh, okay. Hey, I watched some of that. Yeah.
Oh. Well, press one if you think Lindsey Graham should have been nominated for Best Ass Kisser in a Supporting Role.
Without a doubt, he would have won. Yeah.
Press two if you think Pete Buttigieg should have been nominated for Best Costume Design for an Empty Suit.
Ooh, yeah.
Indeedy. Press three if you think John Bolton should have been nominated for Biggest Self-Serving Prick in a Misleading Role.
I like that. I like that. We should. Did I pull it? Oh, I did pull it. Since you went there, yeah. For those of us who missed it, and I actually didn't see this when it happened, way to go, Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt wins the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for his role in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which a movie that I just thoroughly hated. I mean, and I like Quentin Tarantino movies mostly. And I thought Pulp Fiction was great. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Ugh, nothing there. Anyway, but Brad Pitt's acceptance speech, here's a little bit of it.
Wow. Thank you.
I could have trimmed the beginning,
I
guess.
Incredible. Really incredible. Thank you to the Academy for this honor of honors. They told me I only have 45 seconds up here, which is 45 seconds more than the Senate gave John Bolton this week.
Boom! Boom! But he's not done yet.
I'm thinking maybe Quentin does a movie about it, and in the end, the adults do the right thing.
Ooh. In the end, the adults do the right thing. I like that.
Yes. So good. Just so good. It was such a good beginning. Do you mind if we get right to Tweeties? Because I've got a lot. We've got a lot to talk about.
But don't say Tweety. Tweety.
No, I'm Tweety sorry. You're right.
Where's the other Tweety? I know I have it here somewhere. It's probably not worth me looking for it. Never mind. The Tweety I was looking for is where he said, "This is what I do for a living. Mark my words, Rand Paul is going to be the nominee." That was him 4 years ago at this point.
So ridiculous.
Anyway, but we will let loose the birdies.
Welcome to my Tweety.
Okay, so what are the Twitters buzzing about today?
Well, first I'm going to tell you what I was buzzing about on Twitter because, let me start with a fun one.
Okay.
It's just a fun one because we were talking about Bloomberg and this is just a lighthearted one.
Okay.
This is from Misplaced Sidekick, just a random tweet that I saw. I think that Bloomberg should purchase all of Trump's debts and then call the loans, take everything.
Ooh,
wouldn't that be a fun day?
That would be good. I mean, keep
thinking
that.
Oh, and I
see
you were responding to Sherry Jacobus, who blocked me, so I wouldn't have seen it.
Wait, say that again. Who what?
Sherry Jacobus. Is that how you say her name?
I have no idea. I don't know who that is.
She's a conservative commentator who I think is anti-Trump, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know why she blocked me. I don't think I've ever said anything that bad about her. But anywho, it would be fun if, with all that money, if Bloomberg just bought up everything and then just totally just threw it into you know, into Trump's face and
there
said,
"There are so many things that Bloomberg and Steyer could do with the ridiculous amounts of money they're spending on their ridiculous campaigns." Now, I know Steyer doesn't have a shot in hell. And as I said to him on this very program, put the money to good use. $100 million, he's already past that. He's up almost to $200 million. And Michael Bloomberg is almost at $1 billion spent.
Oh, I know. It's insane.
It's criminal.
What they could do with that money, forget the election. How about just, you know, helping people with it? People who need to eat, go to school, get health care.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff.
That stuff. You know, little things like that.
Little things. Anyway, I have a... I think it's like a three-part MSNBC rant.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, so I played the Tweety clip, right?
Oh, that was horrible. I didn't see that. I did not know about that.
Oh, my God. I've got two more. I have two more. Okay. So let's start with this one. Chuck Todd, I don't know if this was on Meet the Press or MTP Daily. It was one of his shows. And, well, I'm just going to play for you what he said, because I can't. All right. Just listen. Listen closely. You don't even have to listen that closely. It'll hit you over the head like a bag of marbles. Here we go.
Hey, I want to bring up something that Jonathan Last put in the bulwark
Jonathan
today.
Last?
About how in Ruth, we've all been on the receiving end of the Bernie online brigade. And here's what he says. He says, no other candidate has anything like this sort of digital brown shirt brigade. I mean, except for Donald Trump. The question no one is asking is this. What if you can't win the presidency without an online mob? What if we now live in a world where having a bullying agro-social media army running around, popping anyone who sticks their head up is either an important ingredient for or a critical marker of success?
Okay, wow. Okay, that's
know everybody's freaking out about this, but... You saw the MAGA rally that's preparing around here. There are people coming from three or four states on that. That's real. And, you know, that is this is like burning.
That is a really depressing sentence that you just read.
The digital brown shirt brigade. So Chuck Todd, I don't care if he's reading a quote from anybody. The fact that from Jonathan Last from The Bulwark, really? What the fuck is The Bulwark and who the hell is Jonathan Last? So you quote
The Bulwark is a conservative website.
Great. Okay, so you quote this and give it credence on national television? The very fact that he read that and amplified the message calling the supporters of the Jewish candidate who lost half his family in the Holocaust digital brown shirts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Daily Beast or Ross Story? Ross Story. Ross Story did a whole rundown of the tweets that he got because of that, of the many Jewish response to this, how offended. I mean, when I'm Jewish, you're Jewish. I was offended. But boy, did he get an earful on Twitter about that.
Good.
And today it's continuing.
Good.
People are calling for him to be fired.
He should be.
Get rid of him. How dare
he?
He
should be fired, and they should send Tweety with him.
Yep.
Well, why are those two on the air?
I can't believe what Tweety said. That was horrible.
Horrible. Basically, he said what that caller to Tom Hartman said. Socialism is communism. No, it isn't. He should be smarter than that. And then he goes on to say, well, when Castro first came on the scene, we loved him. I loved him. Well, then you're just as guilty as what you're accusing Bernie Sanders of. So go fuck yourself, Tweety. My God.
Ugh. Anyway, so to continue the MSNBC rant, because we don't have... Well,
I've got one
time.
More.
Oh, you have more. Oh, go ahead.
So this morning Jerk was broadcasting live from New Hampshire because today they're voting. And I didn't see this either. I just saw it online. There's a segment with Ari Melber. This might have been from his show last night because I think they're all out in New Hampshire. Anyway, he's going around to people at the table sitting at the little coffee shop where they're set up. Mm-hmm. And he asks a voter who she voted for. Wait till you hear this.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Bernie, although there are a number of candidates that I really like, and so I felt like I when I finished voting, I was still undecided, including Elizabeth, including Michael Bennett, for that matter.
Now, that's sort of a paradox, to decide and then feel undecided. So you're a complex person.
Well, yes, but I want to say the reason I went for Bernie is because of MSNBC. And
go on.
I think it is completely cynical to say that he's lost 50% of his vote from the last time when there were two candidates. Now there are multiple wonderful candidates who would be great presidents and people that we could, I think, that we can unify and get behind. But the kind of the stop Bernie cynicism that I heard from a number of people, I watch MSNBC constantly, so I heard that from a number of commentators, and so that just, it made me angry enough. I said, okay, Bernie's got my vote.
This is such an interesting point. What you're saying is, shut up, we take criticism.
All right, that's enough of him. So awesome was that? Because you people are trying so hard to bury him. This was my fuck you to you. Tell me not to vote for Bernie. You try to stop him. Good. I'm going to vote for him.
And that's a common response, actually. When I am, you know, when I hear people screaming about Elizabeth Warren and is she electable and how Wall Street hates her and look what's going to happen, that makes me want to vote for her more, not less.
Absolutely.
All the things that they're saying about these people makes, well, you know, I don't even need to go on.
So now those are the three MSNBC clips I had. So what do you have?
Okay, so just more journalistic malpractice by them. Mm-hmm. This is from yesterday, actually. I'll read you my little three tweets, and then I have actually more, like, not even about the same topic. But okay, you're committing journalistic malpractice, MSNBC, by continuing to promote Trump rallies and interview supporters. What's the news value? None. What's the damage? Everything. He's an existential threat to democracy, and you continue to boost him.
Yep.
No obligation to boost dictators who want to destroy us. And then I go on. No news network is obligated to give Trump equal time, especially after the impeachment trial demonstrated beyond any doubt that he's working against his own citizens, has total disregard for the rule of law and democracy. Every outlet has a responsibility to save what's left of our country. And finally, I added, so tell us, MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, CNN, why do you insist on perpetuating Trump's propaganda, lies, and smears? Profit over country? Seems obvious to viewers that your priorities need a reset. Stat, you have responsibility to sound the alarm, not aid and abet.
Yeah,
and then, down thread, I wrote, and right on cue, this was like a few hours later, right on cue, Tweety shows a clip from Trump's ego rally, a clip that has no news value and only serves Trump's efforts to get his insults and propaganda amplified.
Wow.
That was my rant from yesterday. Oh, then it goes on. Today, I said Klobuchar is on MSNBC again. That's twice in 2 hours. Just sign her on as a regular contributor.
It's the Amy
already.
And Pete show. That's all they're about. Amy and Pete, Pete and Amy. I got to tell, we've talked about that. I like Ali Velshi.
Well, yeah.
So he's now on very early on weekend mornings, and I'm awake because I don't sleep. So I'm up. I watched it Saturday, and I'm a fan, or I was. Saturday was all the first hour. The whole thing was all Pete all the time, and let's slam Bernie. It was.
And
so I got into a Twitter fight with him. You know me. Meek and timid on Twitter, and I called him out on it. And you know, I wish I don't have the tweets in front of me. You can go back and find them, I'm sure, from Saturday. And I wrote something about, you know, enough of this already. And then WTAF is what I ended it with.
And
he writes back.
No, totally.
Nicole, I'm more than happy to have a conversation with you, but I can't have the nastiness and expletives. What, expletives? The letter F is an expletive now? You ain't heard nothing yet. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I was holding myself back. You know me.
No, I can. I know. I was going to say, if the fact that you just used
WTAF
is a big concession there.
Exactly.
And finally, today I ended with, and I am so sick of, who did you vote for reporting? Anecdotal, meaningless. Uh-huh. We'll get results.
Yep.
We'll know. Now cover the issues, the news, like, you know, the Department of Justice corruption, which leads me right into this story.
Oh, no.
Are you ready? I've got two
I'm
or three.
Ready.
No,
I
I've got
think
maybe
I know
four,
where you're
five.
Going. Oh, there are a few of them. Okay, go.
Yeah, okay.
I know a couple of them.
It starts with this from Natasha Bertrand. Wow, comes just to, okay, the DOJ is changing its sentencing recommendation for Roger Stone, according to a senior DOJ official. The department finds 7 to 9 years extreme, excessive, and grossly disproportionate. Okay,
yep.
She says, wow, this comes right after Trump tweeted that the Stone sentencing recommendation was a miscarriage of justice that he cannot allow.
Yep.
Okay, then The Hill says, just now, and then I'll go on with the other commentary tweets, The Justice Department prosecutor who asked, just came out, who asked the judge to sentence Roger Stone to between 7 to 9 years in prison, has withdrawn from the former Trump aides case after reports that officials would seek to reduce the sentencing recommendation.
Oh.
And then Empty Wheel said this will make it easier to testify at House Judiciary Committee.
It should. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh, and it gets curiouser and curiouser.
And then meanwhile, the commentary on the original thing where, you know, they were saying to reduce, Rachel Maddow said in the movie version of this moment in history, the movie where America wins at the end,
this is the
moment when a whole bunch of people resign.
Yes,
which of course,
right. I'm waiting. Well, there was one. Come on. And might I just say, this would be a really good time for Anonymous to come forward and identify his or herself.
Yes.
Because if this person was really a patriot, they would say, screw my job. I need to do what's right for the American people.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Of course not.
Unless they already have and we just don't know. But okay. Then the DOJ, this is from Blake News, Blake Hounshell of Politico. He said, DOJ insists the changes to Stone's sentencing request happened before Trump went on a dead of night tweet storm, right? So Noah Shachtman of the Daily Beast says 110% believable, Noah added right after his third cup of opium tea.
Right, I saw that too. I did see that.
Then Maya Wiley jumped in after she's doing as a quote tweet over Trump's tweet. This is a horrible and very unfair situation. The real crimes were on the other side as nothing happens to them. Cannot allow this miscarriage of justice. This is about, you know, the Roger Stone thing. So Maya Wiley says, by refusing to consider Trump's abuse of power as impeachable, GOP senators didn't just leave Trump in office. They gave him permission for his pardons and sent a message to others that trading with foreign powers to mess in our elections really isn't that serious. She's right. They're all right. Everybody is right about this. And then Mike Levine of ABC says DOJ makes representations to a court, Trump tweets, and then DOJ changes course. I bet you think I'm talking about Roger Stone sentencing. I'm not.
No.
Remember this from last summer? Mm-hmm. And he talks about the census citizenship question right after Trump tweeted. President Donald Trump, wait, this is from ABC, reverses course on census citizenship question after, oh, sorry, wait, hold on. TV or video just started playing automatically. Reverses course on census citizenship question after Trump's tweet. And that was from back in 2019, July. So he's done this before. And as everybody has been telling us on the Democratic House side during the impeachment trial, he won't stop.
Yeah, no, this is only going to get worse. As we saw, look, we had a Friday night massacre already immediately after he's acquitted by the Senate. He goes and fires Vindman and his twin brother just because he can. Not that his brother did anything. Did anything wrong. He stepped up as a patriot. And
not only that, he was subpoenaed. He didn't just step up.
Right.
He said, I'm subpoenaed, so I'm doing the thing I have to do or I'll get thrown in jail. You know, so.
But Trump told him to ignore the subpoena. So, you know, so that what the dictator wants, the dictator gets.
Yeah, of course.
Little
anyway,
Dick. We can call him Little Dick now.
Meanwhile, Raw Stories reporting today that Russian state media boasts Trump acquittal will put him in even deeper in Kremlin's pocket.
Yeah.
So, you know, it all the news is starting to sort of blend together now. How the Washington Times, you need a reason to win the Senate, Democrats. Here's one. Mitch McConnell on judges. My motto for the year is leave no vacancy behind.
Wow. And the Washington Times said that? They're not exactly a left-wing publication.
I know. You know, they put out a few things that are, like they always put out reports about shootings. And I quote them a lot. They're one of the few outlets that pays attention to shootings.
Huh.
When people get killed by guns, including little toddlers who are playing with guns and they go off in their parents' car, put them out there.
Oh,
and so I do pay attention to some of their reporting and I get hell for it. But you know what? If they report something that is accurate, I will report it back.
Of course. Yep.
Now, here's something.
Yeah.
This is from Frank Thorpe of NBC. Senator Warner attempts to unanimously pass his bill to require a campaign report to the FBI if a foreign power reaches out offering assistance.
Yeah.
Senator Blackburn, Marsha Blackburn. Republican objects.
Right.
And instead introduces a bill to have the GAO, quote, look into the debacle in Iowa.
Oh, my God.
There were three votes on three attempts to vote on election interference, and the Republicans voted them all down.
Unbelievable. These people are just, they're enemies of the state. I mean, that's what Donald Trump says about the media. I'll say it about the Republicans in Congress. They're aiding and abetting a criminal. They're aiding and abetting a dictator wannabe, and they're giving him all the powers that he wants. So when we do go full circle and I mean, we're already, this is a fascist state at this point under Donald Trump. When he refuses to leave office after he loses the election, it's going to be on them.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, please. Sarah Posner of Type Investigate, at Type Investigate, okay. She said the GOP fundraising forms mimic official census documents. And she goes to the Oklahoman. .com. Uh-huh. GOP fundraising mimics documents. Some Oklahoma residents have received fundraising surveys from the RNC that look awfully similar to official U.S. Census forms.
Oh,
in heavy
God.
Ink on the envelope are the words in caps, do not destroy official document, and quote, 2020 Congressional District Census is written across the top of several forms,
oh,
according to a resident. They include a letter from Chairwoman Ronna Romney McDaniel of the Republican National Committee asking for the support of Trump and soliciting donations.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Everything, that's pretty major.
Everything is broken. And there's nobody to hold them accountable because the attorney general, the chief law enforcement officer of the country, is a corrupt crook under Donald Trump's thumb.
He's his Roy Cohn. He wanted it.
Roy
he Cohn. Got it.
He did.
He's a willing participant in every crime.
Everything. Everything.
I mean, look what's happening with Rudy Giuliani.
Oh.
You know, speaking of the Roger Stone thing, that's not the first time that this has happened on the what's his name? On the, oh my God, his name just went out of my head. The first one who was indicted.
Michael Flynn. Michael Flynn?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
The U.S. attorney was replaced by Barr on that case.
Yes,
and
wait,
talking about getting no time.
Yeah, well, here's the latest on that. Hold on, let me find this.
Thanks.
I've got something here. Where did I put it? Basically, the I don't know what I did with it. Here it is. The update: Michael Flynn's sentencing that was set for February 27th canceled until further notice.
Yep, and they want to just get, they're asking for no more time.
Of course.
And they're all going to get pardoned if Trump gets reelected.
Of course.
Maybe even if he doesn't.
Of course. Well, he'll let them look, if he doesn't, his last day in office, if he doesn't do it before then because he doesn't give a shit about appearances, he'll let them all go. He'll pardon them all.
Oh, you can count on it. I have no doubt about
that.
Asha Rangappa?
Yep.
She's with CNN.
Yeah.
She said she's quote tweeting over Sam Vinograd from CNN, who says, "I hope this means something." Someone. Okay, wait. I'm trying to figure out where the inception of this is, but I'll just read it. "I hope this means someone is vetting Rudy's info before it gets to decision makers. But I'm wondering how unusual it is for a private citizen representing private clients to have special process set up for them." You know, he's going right to Barr. He has access to Barr. And Asha says the irony here is that, and this is about, you know, the whole Ukraine, the whole Biden thing.
Uh-huh.
He's got this direct portal now to Barr. The irony here is that these folks believed the FBI never should have touched the Steele dossier because it originated as opposition research. Giuliani has admitted.
Wait a minute. It originated as opposition research by a Republican against Trump.
Right. But this is, she's just quoting back at them. So she's mocking their own words.
Yep.
And then saying Giuliani has admitted that his goal is to dig up oppo on Biden. But in this case, he has his own special channel to DOJ.
Oh, God. Yeah.
But it did originate with a Republican. But she was using their own argument against them this case. She didn't want to go back into it. And plus, she only had 280 to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, you know, Giuliani is doing exactly the thing that they accused about the Steele dossier. He's doing it.
Yes, of course. It's you know, it's the old, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Always.
Yeah. Right. Just, you know, bringing it back around full circle.
Okay, I don't know if you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm.
No, I on and off over the years, not recently, but I do know the stories. This is a great okay. story.
So the story is that what's his name puts on
Larry David
puts on a MAGA hat so that these bullies, when they see him in a MAGA hat, will leave him alone. Right. All right. So he's driving around in his car and this guy on a motorcycle comes up beside him and he puts on the MAGA hat and the motorcycle guy is like, hey, buddy, or something. You know.
Well, he was going to bitch him out for cutting him off. And so he puts on the MAGA hat and the guy says, oh, no problem.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Go on with your bad self.
So Trump puts out a big tweet in caps, tough guys for Trump. And he shows this clip, right? So then Eugene Gu, MD, who is the founder of Cool Quit, he says, a tobacco addiction thing. He said, this basically is free advertising for Larry David's show, Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he demonstrates how the Trump MAGA hat is great for soothing angry racist douchebags and keeping people away. What a spectacular self-own.
And then he deleted it. Because somebody else deleted it.
It's still there.
Is it still there?
Oh, yeah,
he deleted something. He deleted something after somebody realized that he fucked up.
Right. After somebody catches him.
Right. Oh, here it was. Oh, okay. Oh, it was the post where Trump tweeted about Michael Bloomberg and the stop and frisk shit, what we were talking to Benjamin Dixon about. Bloomberg is a total racist. And Howie Klein writes, breaking pot kettle situation. Trump, a notorious racist, tweeted that Mini Mike is a racist. Also true, but come on. Trump deleted his tweet when he realized the hypocrisy of the situation. And then I retweeted it and said, correction, someone else deleted it when they realized his hypocrisy. Just saying.
Good. Oh, God. Who was it that just put out this long thread? Oh, it was Tim. Oh, what's his name? He's a reporter. He always talks about Trump. He wrote a book about Trump. I forgot his last name. I think I saved it. But anyway, he wrote this long, like 20-part thread about Trump's racism. He addressed it to Donnie Jr. because Jr. was making fun of Minnie Mike, you know, of the whole thing with the racism, too. So he said, oh, yeah, you want to talk about your dad? And he went on such a long, 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 I mean, extensive. Tim O'Brien. Here it is. Here's the tweet to Donnie Jr. Oh, my God, your father's the most overt and flagrantly hateful racist and bigot in the modern presidency. And nothing, absolutely nothing in Mike Bloomberg's background puts him in the same category as your dad. But let us count the ways. OK, I'm not sure how much, you know, we want to agree or disagree with all of that. But he then goes on to a long thread about, well, here's what he's done. Tick, tick, tick on. Here's just to read you a few.
Okay.
Your dad and his father, Fred, ran a housing business that the Justice Department censured in 73 for discriminating against prospective tenants of color. Jack O'Donnell, a senior executive at your dad's Atlantic City casinos during the 1980s, described him as someone whose prejudices didn't stop at the color of one's skin. Everyone was subject to judgment. It could be their ethnicity, their gender, their religion. O'Donnell also described Trump as picky about who handled his cash back then. Black guys counting the money. I hate it. The only kind of people I want counting my money are short guys that wear yarmulkes every day. Anyway, he goes into this endless
thread.
So anyone needs some oppo research on his racism, just go to Tim O'Brien's feed. Uh-huh. Okay, this is happening from Carolyn Orr.
Okay.
The FBI is expanding its focus on domestic terrorism, and that includes pro-choice violence, even though the FBI couldn't cite a single instance of pro-choice-inspired violent extremism.
Oh, my God. All right.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
And finally, my last one.
Yeah.
Here's the cuts that Trump is making in his $4.8 trillion budget. Okay. Pro-life my ass, I might add.
Yeah.
Cuts. Medicare by $850 billion.
Yep.
Medicaid by $920 billion. Wow. Social Security by $30 billion. Food stamps by $181 billion. Education by 8%. Health and Human Services by 9%, EPA by 26%, Interior, Parks, and so on by 13%, housing by 15% during booming economy and tax cuts. That was from Maria Teresa Kumar.
Wow. Yeah. No. Well, the good thing is the president's budget is always dead on arrival, but that's an extra good thing now because this is batshit fucking crazy.
Everything is. Everything is insane.
Everything is broken. Go listen to Bob Dylan's Everything is Broken. I would end the show with it, but I'd get copyright violated.
That's right. You'd be pulled again. Oh, boy.
So anyway, so there's that. And with that, we're just about out of time. Tonight, we get the results of the New Hampshire primary. You know, I think it might be time to say bye-bye, Joe. So maybe one last time before we go.
Go to Joe 30330.
Okay, just to get
that. He's off to South Carolina. He's skipping New Hampshire tonight.
Oh, gee, I wonder why. All right. Gotta yeah. Laugh. Find her on the Twitters at Gotta Laugh. And here, of course, every Tuesday. Thank you, Laffy.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye. I don't know what we're doing tomorrow yet. We'll obviously cover the New Hampshire primary. We may have to get our pal Dennis Campbell on and talk about what went on over in the UK while we were all, you know, dealing with impeachment and the insanity that's happening here. So we'll figure it out. Until tomorrow, thank you for listening. And, you know... I'm just looking for that perfect sign-off. Still haven't come up with it. One day it'll come to me. Push back on the motherfuckers. I'll leave you with that. Thanks, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye.